Health and Wellness Committee for the Texas Fire Committee, and have a roll call, but I'm going to use a little artistic license here as the, probably the only chance I have any authority here, then maybe we can go down the road instead of just a regular roll call. We'll do a brief introduction so we all kind of know each other. I think a few of us are familiar, but want to start maybe down on the far left end there?
There you go.
You start the introductions?
Oh, sure. Hi, everybody. I'm Del Albright, Fire Chief at in Murphy, Texas. Been there about 8 years. Prior to that, I was in Brownwood, and prior to that, I was in the good old state of California and in the military. So I'm excited to be here.
Michael Mayer, Houston Fire Department. Been with the committee and my colleagues since the group's inception. So it's good to see everybody together again.
I'm Ashley Watson. I work for Euless Fire. I've been there for 17 years. I am just a lowly little fireman, but living it up on that land. I'm married to Stephen Watson at Parker County, ESD1. He's the fire chief there. And we have a four-year-old daughter who is insane and very sweet sometimes. On the side, I do emergency room nursing, and then I'm a functional medicine practitioner for firefighter health and wellness.
Chris Call, I'm a captain with Portland Fire Department. I've been there about 10 years and just over 19 years total in the fire service.
I'm Doug Bucker with Sugarland, and just like Chris and Chief Mayor, we were lucky, and Danny of the Year, we were lucky enough to be on the committee when it started with Mala Sharmer back when Robert Moore was on the commission and kind of headed this up.
Good morning, Daniel D. Year. I'm recently retired from the Dallas Fire Department, 45 years in the fire service, and I have been on the committee with Chief Boker and Mike since the inception, and glad to see everybody.
Stephen Green, Assistant Chief of Administration and Longview Fire Department. Been there 27 years and been on here as well with Chief D. Year and Boker, and as well as the inception of this committee as we sit here.
Good morning, Brian O'Neill, San Antonio Fire Department, Assistant Fire Chief, been in 23 years over things like safety and health, and deeply involved in cancer prevention and mental health.
Good morning, Adam Story. I'm with the Cedar Park Fire Department. I'm the Assistant Fire Chief over administration, the Fire Marshal's Office, and then all things health and safety for our department. Been with the department for a little over 26 years.
Mm-hmm. Looks like that's it. I think that's our roll call. I can't see. Are we missing members?
Missing Homer Salinas.
Okay. And Homer's been involved. He helped us with the cancer project. I think he's also the rep for the Texas Fire Chiefs Association on their health and wellness committee.
We'll reach out to him, see what happened.
Very good. So the next order of business is the election of officers. And I suppose... is there a formal way to do that, or we just call for nominations?
You just call for nominations, and we'll follow the Robert Rules of Order. So either take all you get, or if you don't get but one, I guess you could do it by acclamation. So see what happens.
Do I have any nominations for the position of chair?
I'll nominate Chief Boker as our chair.
I second that.
Any other nominations? All right. Well, we have a nomination and a second. Is that a motion?
Yeah, guys, I'm going to make it. If there's no other names, then I make a motion that we accept Chief Boker by proclamation. There's no other names. So,
all right.
Does that sound accurate to our legal counsel?
I'd feel better if you go ahead and call a vote.
Okay.
All those in favor.
First, we need a second. We need a first and a second. Huh?
Yeah.
I have the motion.
So the motion by the year and the second by call, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? So we have a chair. And nominations for vice chair, which, by the way, will be a heavy lift with the chair that you have selected.
Wouldn't
happen
to help.
In that case, I'd like to
nominate
Chief the Year for the vice chair.
We have one nomination of the year. Any other nominations?
I would like to nominate Chief Mayer.
Michael Mayer.
Michael Mayer.
Okay. Two nominations, DeYeer and Mir. Any other nominations? All right, I know he's your lawyer, but I'm going to borrow one. How do we proceed from here?
Need to make a motion for the first candidate, and then all those in favor say aye. All those opposed, or actually we could just do it by all those in favor of the first candidate and then all those in favor of the second candidate.
Okay.
We don't need an opposition.
We don't need a ballot?
No.
Okay.
No ballot, just all those in favor of this candidate, all those in favor of that candidate. Okay. That's all we need to do.
And for recording purposes, would it be better to show by a sign of hands rather than just saying aye so it's easier for you to record who does?
Actually, that is better.
Okay.
All those in favor, raise your hand.
All right, so we'll do a hand vote. All those in favor of DeYeer, raise your hand.
We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
And all those in favor of Mir.
Yeah, I'm good either way.
There it is, DeYeer.
There we go. We have a majority there with DeYeer. So DeYeer will be...
The chair it up, Joe.
There's nine. I didn't check.
Okay, so three.
All right, so Daniel Gere will be the vice chair and now secretary. Any nominations for the position of secretary?
I'll do it. That's fine.
All right,
we'll nominate each other.
Okay. We have a nomination for Mir and Watson. Any other nominations? All right, so we'll do a hand vote on this as well. All those that would support Mir as the secretary, raise your hand. Six, and all those for Watson. Okay, we have six affirmatives for Mir and zero votes. Watson didn't.
No, I voted for myself.
I didn't see your hand.
I voted for myself. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. So now we have a secretary. So Boker, DeYeer, and Mir.
It should have been the most painful part of this meeting. So there's just been a lot of discussion.
It's all downhill now.
Yeah. By the way, our new chair is buying lunch today.
Well, this might be the only committee where Homer was safe. Usually Homer would have gotten a Dear John email. All right, overview of the TCFP rules and policies related to the committee and the history of the committee.
So, yeah, I'll lead this and we can just work through it. I'm going to hit a few of the highlights. So the first document you see there after the committee list is... the rule, it's Title 37, Part 13, Chapter 463. This is the rule that the Sunset Commission required the commissioners to create after the 2021 session. One of the recommendations during that Sunset Review was to formalize and begin functioning legally with the committees. So essentially, for a number of years, we had all these committees and they were not functioning in accordance with the law, and I don't think it was to anybody's fault. It was just nobody paying attention to the rules, I guess. So if you'll look at 463.1, we'll skip down to section B there. The commission has three committees, Health and Wellness Committee being one of those three. This committee will continue for 4 years from the date of creation. So the date of creation essentially is 2024. So it'll function for 4 years, and then the commission will have to vote in 4 years whether this committee continues or not. This committee, under the guidance of your chair, in this case Chair Boker, can create short-term ad hoc working groups. So if you get on a topic, just pick one. Let's say we're going to talk about blisters on toes or something, and you guys want to do a lot more research, or you want to have an ad hoc committee for that, you have the authority, your chair has the authority to create an ad hoc committee specific to that. When that work is done, when they've submitted a report to you all and you're happy with that, that committee would go away. So gives you some flexibility there on some working groups. When you look at 463.3, pretty much lays everything out. Committees are subject to the rules contained here within 463. You just did what C spells out. You had to elect members of the committee as chairperson and vice chair. Important thing to point out is that every 2 years, you'll have to select a chair and a vice chair moving forward from here. So historically, it was every year. According to this rule now, it's going to be every 2 years. So D outlines that the committees are established with an odd number of members. In this particular case, you have 11. Now, today there's only 9 of you here. Homer Salinas didn't make it, and that 11th position, and I can show it to you in a little more detail in a minute, but that 11th position doesn't become filled until 2025. So when the commission meets, whether they do it at their November meeting or they wait till the February meeting, there's already a list of eligible folks that applied with all of you all, and they'll put that next person in that 11th seat. So they opted just to leave it vacant because we're so close to the new year. So that'll start in 2025. So you'll have a full committee, I'll say, by February, if not sooner, of 25. You're required to meet at least twice a year. You can meet more. But you have to meet at least twice a year. Obviously, this year that might be hard to do because we're already at the end of it. So we'll leave that to our legal counsel on that when we start talking about future meetings. And then G, we already talked about G a little bit. You can have short-term ad hoc working groups if you want them. The rest of this, if you drop down to 463.7, it talks about the terms. But we'll get in a little more detail in a minute. I'll show you a document that kind of outlines who is in what position. Each position is numbered 1 through 11. And you can see the initial appointment dates. So clearly at some point this rule will get tweaked once all the committees have been, excuse me, after all three committees have been established and the terms are there, you'll see this rule get tweaked a little bit. 463.9 talks about meetings and how they should be conducted. Just a couple of points on that. B talks about the meeting should be held here in Austin. It cannot be held outside of the state of Texas. We have to post the meeting times, location, and agenda. And we have to comply with the Open Meetings Act. And then the committee chair can limit discussion times if needed. And E, I want to talk about E for a minute, because the law allows that you may meet by video conference. However, you still have to have a public notice of meeting. There has to be a designated location in Austin, and whoever the presiding officer of that meeting will be has to be here in Austin. The purpose of this is for the public to be able to show up. Now, there's a challenge. There's a technology challenge for us that still exists today. We don't have the video equipment right now. We're in the process of asking the legislature for money so that we can equip this room the way it needs to be for that. So I don't see that video capability happening for at least another year, but we'll see how that goes. So can't lobby, but you all can lobby as constituents of your elected officials. So if you feel so compelled, reach out and ask them to support the commission in their request for some legislative support.
Yeah. It worked last time.
See, that's the end of that commercial. So the rest of this outlines limitation of powers, testimony, expulsion.
Can I interject on
please.
Expulsion? Members can be expelled for lack of attendance unless excused to more than half of the scheduled committee meetings in a calendar year. We do have one member who did not attend, is not here today. Mm-hmm. We need to make a record Do we know if he has an excuse?
Well, no, that's what I said. I'm going to reach out to him.
Okay. But we do know, make a note that he did not attend the meeting.
Right. We've got it noted in the minutes over here. And then, again, 4-63-17, the abolishment date. Basically, this committee's alive for 4 years, and the commission will determine if it continues after that.
Frank, from a legal question real quick, is it permissible for a committee to have an even number of members?
Not under the rules. No, they have to be odd. Has to be an odd number.
So yes. I'm just curious why we ended up with 10. I know today we have 9, but
so I'll back up. I covered that. You got one that's absent today, and then in February your 11th member will be assigned because that's when the term starts in 25.
Again, but hypothetically, if Homer was here, we just took a vote. We could have voted 5-5.
You could have.
So
yes.
How legally then would that have been? Broken.
The quorum is based on the number of members we have present. If you'll remember from last week, you all had a meeting with four people here. There are 10 assigned, but there are 11 positions. They just wanted to keep it on the schedule of the terms. So that's why they didn't put somebody in for one meeting and then have to pull them out or reappoint them or something like that.
And if there's a vote and there's a tie, then it's not approved. You can push it to the next meeting perhaps when there, you know, the attendance might be different, but if there's a vote and there's a tie, it's not approved.
Okay.
The next document you see, it's an internal policy 004. It's about the appointment of committee members. So what's happened here, there's a rule, but there's a lot of movement, a lot of flexibility when it comes to appointing the committee members. This was the first time the commission was working through this process. So instead of outlining all this in the rule and then knowing the rule was going to have to be tweaked afterwards or tweaked frequently, put it in a policy so that it serves as a guide, but it can be adjusted as need be. And so I included that in this document so you all understand how the selection process worked for you. And then you'll also be able to see on the on the second and third page, you'll see the list of all three committees and the names of those members based on their position. So if you look at page 3, at the bottom, health and wellness, you'll see your position and your term as it has been assigned.
Can I ask a quick procedural follow-up question to Chief DeYeers? If we do have an even number here, is it permissible for a committee member to abstain from a vote to allow for an odd number?
Absolutely. Anybody can abstain at any time in any vote.
Okay. Thank you.
Especially if you feel like there's a conflict or something, you don't necessarily have to explain why you're abstaining, but
You can choose not to cast a vote.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
And then the last page of that document, you'll see the health and wellness was the first committee that was filled in the new process. So the commissioners opted to maintain a two-year eligibility list. And so as we spoke, that 11th position comes up in, I'm sorry, it's not the 11th position. It is position number 2. Actually has a term start date of 2025. So they'll refer to this list and probably reach out to Michael Anderson and he'll accept, so he'll be joining your committee most likely at your first meeting in 2025. But in the event there is a vacancy in the course of the next 2 years, this allows the commissioners just to go to this list, find the next person so they don't have to go back through the application process and all that. In whole, that's about a three-month process, so that would really delay for maintaining a full committee, and this will allow them the ability just to appoint somebody and we keep moving. So I believe in the few years I've been around here, that is a huge improvement to the way things have been done in the past. Sure. And just having a policy on how the committee member selection is going to work is a big step, because historically it was something different every time they did this. So
Mike, I have a question.
Yeah.
The page before where you see a list of our names.
Yep.
These positions don't align with the one that was at the beginning of this packet. Is which ones are we going by as a reference?
The term length.
The position first one looked like it was just
that's not an official. The first one's an alphabetical list of the members of the committee.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Thank you.
That's why there are no position numbers listed in there. Just.
Yeah.
The other thing you'll notice, looking at the list of names here on page 3 of Health and Wellness, there are some individuals, Daniel Deere, Boker, Meyer, Green, and Celine, and Kale as well. They have 2018 next to them, and you'll see their terms those positions have terms that'll start in 26. So we had a legal ruling. He happens to be in the room, but you are what is known as holdover committee members. And so you're filling the seat you're in, and in 2026, the commissioners will decide what they want to do. Most likely, they'll take applications. You'll be eligible to apply because you're not in a assigned term at this point. You're continuing from your previous service, so you're a holdover member. So when we get 2 years down the road and they start taking applications, we'll remind you you're eligible to apply for that, to be assigned to a term, if that indeed works out that way.
As the eligibility list, so it's a list, not a pool.
Right.
The next guy is Michael Anderson.
Right.
And have they been notified of their positions?
Yes.
Okay.
And so what would happen is there'll be a agenda item, whether it's in November or February meeting, and we'll have that conversation with legal and the commission chair. But they'll have an agenda item to fill a seat on here for that term of 25, and we'll give them that list, and then they'll make their decision accordingly. So, but the commission selects the committee members. So,
very good. So, any questions on rules or policies? All right. And then the second part of that agenda item is the history of the committee, and I'll start.
Sure.
There's a number of us that have been involved in some form or fashion, and so we have taken on this project. The committee was a suggestion of Danny Kistner, probably prior to him in open comment bringing it up. It had been brought up by others, but that's about when I started paying attention. And Danny Kistner suggested a health and wellness committee, and so kind of a point of reference on the rules for you, Director Wisco. Originally, this committee was set up where it reported to the commission, but all action items go to the Firefighter Advisory Board as other changes would. Is that still the established?
No.
No?
That was changed in the state law. Everything goes back to the commission. They'll determine if something needs to go to a committee. But the state law is very clear that nothing can be sent back to a committee once it's brought forward to the commission. So that was one of the many complaints the fire service had about the way the commission was operating their committees.
Okay. All right.
So it could go to the commissioners, and they could choose to send it back to the advisory.
No, they cannot send it back to the committee it came from. They could choose to send it to a different
committee. Right. Yeah. So this committee could send the recommendations to the commissioners. The commissioners can send it back to the advisory committee.
They can't send it back. They can send it forward to them.
Okay.
So each committee can only see it once.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Semantics, but yeah.
The law is very clear. You can't send anything back to a committee after that committee has seen it.
And so the history of this committee in 2018 seems like a long time ago.
It was.
But we've tackled a few projects and perhaps lobbied in another semantics thing, lobbied not in a traditional sense, but lobbied for some changes in the commission to increase awareness. And so some of the things that we've tackled in the past, we did a cancer initiative, which was a combined project for many departments. We took the largest department in the state and arguably one of the smaller departments in, from Porter Fire to Houston Fire, or Portland Fire, I'm sorry, to Houston Fire, and a number of departments in between, with the idea that people watching this video would see a department that looked like theirs. And we talked about cancer, and so it was a bit Houston-centric on the dust study and bringing it back to the station. But then we looked at different things different departments are doing and affirmed a commitment to cancer awareness. That was one. We did a heart health project that we ended up leaning on McKinney Fire and their medical direction through Best EMS. And so we took a film crew from Sugarland up to McKinney on a very long one-day trip to do a video on cardiac health using their medical director, which required a ton of editing because he's a really smart medical director, but not much for the camera. Very bland. We have worked almost in perpetuity on a mental health module that we've had zero success with because we were dealing, some of the problems that came up with that is no one on the committee was a specialist in that area, and so we were leaning on professionals in that arena that generally get paid to do their vocation, and so it stalled, and then we had some key members that moved out of state, and so that one stalled. We've taken the injury report and analyzed it and broken it down to a digestible kind of tool that the average firefighter across the state can look at a PowerPoint or a few pages to understand the gist of it. We have found the last few years there's been no need to do that because Grace is, she's just knocking it out of the park when it comes to that injury report. She's taken a very difficult data entry side and putting it into a document that really lends itself to an understanding and a bit of editorializing in there that makes it more understandable. So those are some of the projects that we've taken. What we haven't done good at is consistency and follow through. There's been a few people that do a lot of work and the work comes in spurts, and that probably wouldn't have even happened if we hadn't had such a strong advocate on the commission in Mala Sharmer, who was the public commissioner at the time, and just relentless in her push to keep the committee moving. And so the formalization of the rules hopefully will help us a little bit with that consistency and the dedicated structure. Hopefully we'll pick some projects that we have stay power and that we'll follow through on. So my last comment on it will be is that we have traditionally not suggested to the commission a rules change. There have been rules that have changed coincidentally, like the cancer awareness initiative or the requirement in real time, your department should be right now doing your cancer awareness and your injury report reviews. Those were more or less incidental to the committee because you tend to act on things that you're talking about. Because we were talking more about it, the commission took those up. And I don't know the behind the scenes as to really how those got pushed. I think it's fair to say, and you guys, if you disagree, correct, I don't think that the committee was the one pushing those changes so much. Although Marla was pretty, Commissioner Sharma was pretty adamant that the work that the committee was doing needed to have some teeth to it, that the Texas Fire Service got value out of it. And so so in summary, then, the work that we've done mainly has been educational in nature, and it's not like true initial research. It's kind of summarizing other people's research, finding resources that are available, compiling that, and then making it available to the Texas Fire Service. And that's kind of the history as I understand it. Anybody have anything you'd like to add to projects or scope or intents?
I think that's spot on, Doug.
I would weigh in on, I think one of the issues with the pre-existing committee was we had a lot of individuals who had passion in just one of these specific areas. And once, like, the cancer initiative was addressed, they pretty much vanished from the committee. And when we had the same thing happen with the heart. And so that was one of the reasons why we ended up with no committee here as recently as a month ago. So what I would almost like to encourage is the folks that are here in the room, we're on the committee to help steer it, and we're now empowered to develop ad hoc committees so we could get our specialists at any time. We could reach out into any of those arenas and get a committee together quickly and get those individuals who have that passion. So any firefighter in the state of Texas, hypothetically, that has passion on, I don't know, mental health or burn injuries or whatever, that they could serve on that ad hoc committee to forward that information to us so that we could make the decisions on what to do with it as we move forward. Because I'd hate to start seeing y'all dropping off the committee once your goal was met. I think our goal is to look at the health and wellness in a really broad stroke across the state of Texas for the fire service. Because while we have a handful of obviously hot topics that have been there for a number of years, that's going to change at some point. There'll be something else new on there that's coming along, or something within these realms will change drastically. So I just want to just weigh that in as opinion, because I think from the previous committee that was one of the flaws we had. We had folks that had passion in one, but they were of no use on any of the others, and I think
compounding that, yeah, I agree with you, and compounding that was the committee was in general, while I think we were focused on things, we weren't as organized as we should have been. So that would be my commitment as the chairperson, that we'll set up like a calendar a year in advance so you can plan ahead. And we did a few last minute, I mean, it was kind of during COVID that kind of made it difficult too, where we would change meeting locations and we were trying some telemeetings. But if we establish a calendar up front, and my gut feeling is if we do it in conjunction with commission meetings, so that every commission meeting there's an agenda item to receive a report from the Health and Wellness Committee. And so that's a valuable tool to us to keep the relevance of the committee up, to show the work the committee is doing. And this room will be filled with, you know, 30 or 40 leaders. These are leader, you know, chief officer type personnel from the Texas Fire Service. So even in an update to the commission, they're going to take something back with them. So it doesn't have to be these grand videos or these big initiatives. Sometimes just the consistent messaging. And so making sure that we hold our meetings, that there's an agenda to those meetings, that we set out our priorities of what we want to focus on, we get regular feedback and a variety of mechanisms, then we start to really see an impact to the Texas Fire Service.
Chief, when do we create that scope for what we're wanting this committee to touch on?
I think we're going to do it.
I think when you get to the subjects for future meeting agendas and things like that, we could have a fairly broad conversation.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we're going to do it in number six, and I'm reading that, I'm like, what I don't want to do is paint us into a corner that, you know, based on, like, we're shooting from the hip, like, we should be thoughtful in our approach. There's a few things that, like, probably we know, like, right off the top of our head, we should be talking about this. You know, if you're talking about it in your department, I'm assuming I'm probably talking about it in mine. But some quiet, thoughtful reflection in the next meeting, then we make a more inclusive list, and we figure out ad hoc committees that have the skill, the access to certain things. So I think it's a combination between today and the next meeting.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I can add a couple comments.
Please.
First, the committee, the original committee, and many of them are here today, they got a lot done. I think they deserve a lot of credit. I think, as Chairman Boker pointed out, they kind of retooled a little bit the injury report, and we're going to talk about that some more in the next agenda item. But they got the commissioners to adopt a rule requiring everybody review this injury report annually. And the benefit of that, we're putting out a report. We got staff members spending a great deal of time every year to put this together. If we can just get the fire service to read it, there's a lot of information in there that they can turn around and. We all know how smart firefighters are, and they sit around the kitchen table and they take a problem and they dissect it and they fix it. If they could just understand and recognize where the injuries are occurring, maybe we can break this cycle of doing the same old crap all the time and not getting any better at it, you know. And I credit that rule to this committee. They got that passed. And Commissioner Sharma She was a public member of the commission. She's a personal injury attorney, didn't know anything about the fire service, and she took the task of being the chair of this and ran with it. And for as, I won't say disorganized, but for as unrefined as it was functioning, a lot got done. I think there was some incredible work done. The difficulty, the heartburn is the fact that, as Daniel said, it did kind of fall apart as people lost interest or they got their piece done. I think we're kicking off a new era here with this committee today, and I see nothing but good coming from it. The second point I wanted to make is that in the absence of this committee meeting in the last year or so, still a huge issue with mental health and specific suicides, firefighter suicides. So from the legislative point of view, I've watched in two sessions now legislative efforts to mandate what law enforcement does or what EMS does, and they've left the fire service out of that, I think only because nobody was paying attention. And they put some mandates on TECO and some things that they're having to do now with their officers. So about 6 months ago, we engaged TECO, DISHES, Texas A&M, or TEKS specifically, the University of Texas Health Science out of Houston, and Sam Houston State, because they're all doing stuff with first responder suicides, and we're the only ones now. We're the only public safety profession that doesn't have a mandate or really any training for it, outside of the little bit of work that this previous committee did. So we wanted to meet with them to understand, one, what they're doing, two, how's it working, what's not working, what is working, and how could we all join forces and do something together. We've made a lot of progress. We've got another meeting coming up. I know Doug has come to a couple of them. I think we finally got through the minutia of everybody getting to know everybody and everybody saying, here's what we're doing, here's what's not working. We're at the point, we have all agreed, there's an immediate issue of the suicides are still happening, and we got to stop it. Well, it comes down to just some simple education. One, we need to make sure everybody knows that it's okay to reach out for help and who they can call. And two, we need to make sure that everybody understands how to recognize one of their coworkers or even their self having a problem. And so that's kind of been the focus of this group. We're not going to do work like this committee is going to do, but my hope was that by the time this committee got convened, this collective group of state agencies working together, which is still somewhat a novel approach to doing business around the state of Texas, but I'm hoping to be able to bring something to you all at your future meetings based on what we've learned from those conversations. So the work hasn't stalled. I mean, there's a need. There wasn't a committee. I said, well, we're going to step up as staff and try to get something done with this. And I think while we haven't finished it, I think we've got enough information that now we can bring something back to this committee, and you all can push it up to the commission. And I think we can be headed in the right direction on that. So I just wanted to throw those two pieces in there and let you know that we're still working, and we're glad to have you here, and we're going to put some more on your plate moving forward. But yeah, I think you've got an opportunity here to kind of to chart the course, at least for the next year or two anyway.
So I think when Director Wisco brings up the we and this consortium, he sells himself short. The email was from Mike Wisco. He's the one who kind of brought the cops and EMS and fire along with some higher learning institutions and got them all to talk, and it has been productive. It'll be interesting to see. I'm sure your staff helped a lot. I don't want to leave anybody out, but the fire service, I'm going to claim you for the fire service. The fire service led that initiative to pull people together because that's what we do. And when you can get TCOL and Department of State Health Services and fire service all in the same room, you have a lot of power. One interesting thing I learned in there is that we are the small players. The fire service is the smallest entity between the three accrediting bodies. EMS has 80,000. TCOL, I think even
59,000, I believe they told us.
And the fire commission's
we're at 38,000, closing in on 40.
But, yeah. Now, that's paid.
Volunteer.
You know, so you know, like when Governor Abbott reached out during COVID, he engaged the fire service because we get things done. That was apparent in that room. So there's good work that has been done, but that'll be a powerful project to see the outcomes from and see how we can leverage that to our advantage.
Yeah, and I think one way to leverage it is we collectively, the three agencies, want to go to the legislature and present a plan to them. So instead of them just dreaming something up and saying, here's what y'all are going to do, we want to go to them in unison and say, look, we've been working together. This is what we would like to see passed or like sent our direction. And I think that's going to help a lot. We would rather suggest what we need to be doing versus just be told. And I think all of us can relate to that in one way or another. So that's one of the goals, and I think that we'll be successful in that. But we'll certainly, now that you all are reconvened and here, you're going to be a part of that too.
All right. Any other comment on agenda item 4? All right. We'll move on to agenda item 5, discussion of the TCFP injury report.
So I've included that in the packet information we gave you, and I want to talk about a little bit of it. Basically, the legislature mandated in 2009 that the Commission on Fire Protection gather and disseminate a report annually on firefighter injuries. The goal was to figure out how to make the fire service industry safer. With that mandate, there was no funding, there was no clear direction other than just get it done. So from 2010 to 2017, the Commission built a system making use of what they had here. In 2015, the legislature mandated the use of technology and having websites and getting everything automated. So the commission then started working on that, and part of that was with the injury report. So in 2017, they switched over to a new system. We all know it as FIDO. That's where we really, I think, as an agency, got our feet under us as far as collecting data. This injury report has been piecemealed together over the years. Firefighter Advisory Committee, the commissioners, health and wellness have all had input into what kind of data we need to get, what we do with that data. Some good has come from that. And so where we're at today, this is the 2023 report. We have until September 1st of each year to put together this report. And then we have to send it to the State Fire Marshal's office so they can release it with their line of duty death report, which is a bigger animal. Clearly, the State Fire Marshal's office and the commission have some joint roles and some joint authority. The relationship there has greatly improved in the last year and a half, and we're doing a lot of things together on that front. But most recently, again, on the staff side, we've taken a look at the injury report with Grace and a few other folks involved, compliance specifically, and we're trying to take this report now based on some history and make it easier to report an injury and easier to extract the information that we need out of it. So we're working with IT right now. We're basically working to make the FIDO injury reporting system a little bit easier. You're going to get asked a question when you log in. Are you trying to report an injury? Yes or no? If you are, what are you trying to report? Is it an injury? Is it an illness? Or is it an exposure? Or is it cancer? Because the cancer data is important. The farther we go into this, the suicide information is getting more important. So you'll probably see a drop-down menu of 4 or 5 choices. You select what you want to do. It's going to take you to a different screen. We're trying to make it shorter and easier so that we get general information, not necessarily specific, because as you go through this report, you won't see any department names, you won't see any people names. You see categories and you see numbers. And so our goal is that for January of 25 to have a refined, hopefully much easier report system. So when somebody goes in to put in a report, it's easy to do that. It takes less time. And we're getting data that we can truly extract from it almost immediately. The second part of this is we have become very aggressive on investigating injuries, in particular burn injuries. What we've seen in the last 4 years is an upward trend in the number of burn injuries. Just in 2023, we saw a 21% increase in burn injuries. And we're not talking about the guy burned his thumb getting something out of the oven or burned his hand taking something off the stove. We're seeing some pretty significant burn injuries out there. Upwards of 10 to 12 that have been career-ending burn injuries. And so compliance does an investigation on that. It was in our authority already that we're supposed to investigate these injuries. I will say as an agency, that wasn't being done very aggressively. So we changed the system a little bit. When somebody reports a burn injury now, it goes directly to the chief of our compliance division. Hey, there's a burn injury. He takes a look at it. If it meets some criteria, he assigns it to an investigator or the compliance officer. They reach out to the department within 24 hours of the report being received. They initiate an investigation. That investigation could be just a phone call, tell us what happened. All right, that's enough. It doesn't sound like we need to come in. Or, hey, we're going to ask you to secure the articles of protective clothing that were involved. So let's say, for example, the ears were burned. We're going to ask them to hold back the helmet and the hood until we can get in there to see it. And then a compliance officer or investigator will show up and start the investigation there. The way we're approaching this, we're a regulatory agency, we're in the government. Everybody loves seeing the fire commission walk in the door. So the way we're approaching this is we're not doing an investigation to place blame. We're not looking for any fault here. We're trying to understand how the injury occurred. We're trying to figure out how to prevent that injury from occurring in the future. So we approach the departments with the mindset of we want to do this investigation with you. 9 times out of 10, especially for the serious injuries that have put somebody in the hospital, the department's already started an investigation internally. We've been successful in at least 7 instances already in the last 18 months. We go in and work with those departments and their investigation team. We get the information we need. We take on a part of it that's basically looking at the PPE that was involved. We work with the manufacturers. We try to get all the data we can. We stay away from tactics. We're not going to come in and tell a fire department how they're going to fight a fire. That's not the business we're in. We're also not going to go in and say, you need to quit sending firefighters into fires. I mean, we've got to get real. Yes, it's a dangerous job. Yes, people are going to get injured. That doesn't make it acceptable. That's what we're there to try to understand, so that at the end of this, there's a report that if the department so chooses, they can release that report for everybody to learn something from. The Commission on Fire Protection is not going to release that report. That does not mean that report can't get out. We are subject to open records requests. So if we go in and do a report with the department, our piece of that report is opened up, or subject to open records. So far, that has not happened. I think we've had a very good experience, in particular with 4 of the largest state departments in Texas, where we've done some pretty extensive investigations with them. Relationships, obviously, in the beginning, I think a fair word was cautious, because here's the state, the guys that regulate us are here, but I think the end result was a very good working relationship. There was a quality report made available. Now, it's up to that department whether they release it or not. Some have chosen to do so, some have not. All of them have made changes in their operations in one point or another. So we're going to continue doing that. But to tie that whole big long story back in, second part of the improvements to the injury report, when an investigator goes in and starts doing an investigation, his notes, his findings, get attached to this injury report in this new system that we're trying to develop. So at the end of the period, when you get an injury report, you should be able to see that injury from the day it was reported all the way through the investigation and have all the information there. Will that all be included in this report? Not necessarily, but bits and pieces of it that will be pertinent to this report to show some continuation and some follow-through will be made part of it. So what we're trying to get with this is that when in August, when Grace or whoever's doing it hits a button to generate this report, it might be this size, it might be a little bit bigger, but we want it to be thorough. We want it to be complete. Hey, these many injuries were reported. This many were burns. We investigated these burns. This is what we learned from it. That's how we're going to make the fire service better. We need to be sharing that information. So we're trying a continuous basis to improve this reporting mechanism and what we're doing with that. So that's where we're trying to go with it moving forward. I can tell you, as we sit here today, we have 32 open investigations, injury investigations right now. I think that makes it explanatory. We've seen a 21% increase in burn injuries. We're trying to dive into it. Now, we're using compliance officers. We've got one dedicated to investigations, and when he needs help, he reaches back and gets some of the other compliance officers to help him. There's a problem, and we're starting to establish some working theories there. We don't have any concrete evidence yet, but we think it's coming into one of three categories. One, and one that we've already started to see some validation of, ever since COVID, we've had this supply chain issue. So a particular department, I'll pick on the one I came from, Gallison. We had a established spec for our protective clothing. And we had a TPP level that we required that gear to have. When that supply chain issue started, and departments are trying to live up to NFPA 1851, which is enforced here in the state of Texas by law, they got in a position where I need gear right now and I don't give a damn what it is. So they started taking shelf gear, whatever gear was available. It may not have had the TPP rating that they had specified in the previous gear they were buying. At the same time, they may not have made their members aware that this gear doesn't provide the same level of protection you're used to. So we're starting to be able to wrap our head around that in some instances. I think the second working theory that we have out there, we just got some firefighters doing some crazy stuff. I think all of us are aware there's a movement, if you will, across the United States. The all this safety stuff is too much. They're taking us out of the game. People are dying because we're being too safe. And that mentality is taking hold, clearly here in Texas. I think what we're starting to see on a few occasions, we got some firefighters putting themselves in situations they probably shouldn't be in. It's not our place to tell a department how they're going to operate. We can clearly point that out when we see it. And then I think the third working theory that we're closing in on is just PPE in general and the cleaning of it and the degradation of it and 1851 as a whole. And maybe it's not holding up to some of the products of combustion that are out there today. We're certainly seeing some testing that's going on that the PPE that everyone's wearing today is not going to live up to protecting them from the products of combustion involved in electric vehicles or lithium batteries. Now, we're not going to fix that here at the Commission on Fire Protection, but we're going to gather the data that can be shared with the NFPA and other people to maybe help steer some of that. You know, NFPA is about to come out with the new 1970 sometime in the next 6 months. We're still not have a clear window on that. And it's going to mandate the particulate blocking hoods. We have some concerns here in Texas. We've already done some testing and found where these hoods, in some cases, are failing a compliance inspection before they ever hit the street. We need to understand that. Is it where the particulate blocking stuff is at? It's only from the ear down. So maybe we're testing it in the dome and it's not going to meet that. But we don't have clear direction. So we're getting a lot of data for our investigations that we're trying to spin around and use in a positive manner. We have a great relationship with all the manufacturers out there. Our compliance guys have quarterly training sessions. And every one of those quarterly trainings, they spend a day with one manufacturer of some garment of protective clothing or SCBA or something like that. So we're really and truly, as an agency, we're trying to tie this injury report and this data back into something that's useful to everybody. And again, I think we'll be bringing more to this committee and we'll be able to do a lot more moving forward with this. But I want everybody to have the injury report. I think it's going to help you moving forward, as you've already discussed, and maybe where some of the priorities may be in the work that this committee is going to do. So outside of that, I didn't want to get in the weeds on that report, but I kind of wanted to bring you up to speed on where we're at as an agency, and how I think you guys are going to be able to help us with that.
I think there's two interesting, you said that was a lot to digest.
I know.
That was charming.
I did it in 20 minutes. So I had to practice this for a week.
It's good, though. It's good. Like, that's what I see this committee, like, we should be promoting that kind of conversation so that it permeates the Texas Fire Service. So that when guys and gals are sitting around the coffee tables, like, they have ready information to address the number two issue we talked about. Is as you were talking, I was thinking of Daniel, the Chief DeYeer does a class on the number two problem, and that's I'll try not to opine. There is a group that is pushing every fire gets a search, every fire is offensive, every fire is all in fire, and when a department like mine, we're willing to go to 30 to 50 structure fires a year, but they're hearing that stuff every day. It doesn't take long to lose a generation of firefighters to start doing stupid things. And DeYeer has a really good way of kind of putting that in. He's incorporated into a couple of classes. And so we get to be the designated adult in the conversation and share information that, like, I don't want to disparage aggressiveness. It's a constant balancing act. I want to run a very aggressive fire department. I don't want to lead idiots. And sometimes that's a very fine line, but this committee can help departments get the right information to their staff to make better informed decisions. And so that's that number two thing he was talking about. I think that a question that came up in my mind as you were talking is, about 2 years ago, I believe it was Harlingen, came to the Health and Wellness Committee about a third-party cleaning company. And I don't know that we ever helped them find resolution. They had a third party that was using a chemical that essentially degraded their gear to the point they couldn't use it anymore. And they had to throw about $250,000 worth of gear away, which was everything they had. And they had to do an emergency purchase to lease some until they could buy some. And like as now, and I think you were just kind of getting your feet wet. And like, where would a problem such as that kind of reside today?
I think where we try to start it is with compliance, so they can investigate it, and because they've established relationship with these manufacturers now, there's some pretty quick phone calls and conversations with some of these manufacturers. I think in that particular case, if I remember right, they ended up canceling their contract with that third party and doing something different to solve the problem, and some of that was worked out outside of all of us. I mean, that had nothing to do with us. But I think these are the things that our compliance team really puts their heart and soul into figuring out, understanding what's going on and how we can make it better. You know, Texas is the only state that enforces 1851. I'm not going to say that's good. I'm not going to say it's bad. I can tell you, from my days as a firefighter and a fire chief to now, I think we've made a lot of progress. And I think up until about 2 years ago, we had the data to show it was working. That's why that number of burn injuries is so alarming to us now, that we've seen a gradual increase in the last couple of years. And we need to understand that. We need to understand what's going on with that. I think the longer 1851 is around and the cleaning requirements and the processes, we're learning more and more about it, and it's just going to be a continuing project, but it really originates with compliance. I mean, they kind of dive into that head first and try to figure it out every time.
As you were talking, I was reminded that their gear problem resulted when they had two burns. They had a burn, mm-hmm. and then a couple months later, a second burn. One was a car fire, and one was... These weren't interior fire attacks. They had burns, and it was the heat was releasing chemicals from their gear, burning their guys. And so that kind of answered my own question: is that burn would trigger an investigation? It wouldn't be some fire chief throwing up a flag looking for help. You would be there actively. Okay. Anything else in the injury report?
Maybe on the reporting side for FIDO, if we could offer a suggestion, since the website's being retooled right now, excuse me, we learned on our last inspection that it is a requirement to put a report in every month, regardless of whether you have an injury or not. And so maybe putting some kind of trigger on the website that reminds those putting the reports in that you are required to enter no injuries for a month if your department doesn't have any injuries, because I know we missed that a couple of times. Something that just reminds.
The old reporting was zero.
Yes.
It's been a controversial. But you're saying just some type of reminder or something, and so we can research that.
Then we'll have somebody saying, like, you bother me with too many emails. Turn those on.
I put you in my junk. My thought would be something in FIDO itself that when you go into, say, you didn't enter anything in March, you go in to enter something for April, and it reminds you, hey, you have zero entry. You did not put an entry in for March. It is a requirement to at least enter no injuries if you did not have an injury. Something, not an email necessarily, notification or anything, but something within the website itself.
I got something to add to that, but I'll take the rest of the questions first.
How do we gain access to the deeper reports, either the investigative side of these injury reports or just even the original report, to kind of have a better understanding of what actually occurred for that injury?
Well, once they're completed, we share them with the departments. We don't necessarily, right now, we don't share them publicly. It's up to that department to release it. I think that's something we could discuss and have some conversation with.
There was a couple of years ago when this committee was first formed, and we were using some interns from our department to help kind of digest the data. There was a three-way discussion between the committee, the commission, and the workforce commission when it came to our workers' comp. Because of the HIPAA side of that, and we determined, like, we never got access to the raw data, and that went through with new legal counsel since then. So it's probably something to that can be reconsidered. But I know at that point we deferred raw data, never came out of the commission, but the times change. So all right,
one thing I did notice, that it's a great report. One thing that when I was doing this, our in-house testing on going over the injury report, was that it was just one female, unless I'm looking at this wrong, that was listed in the cancer part, and that was under unidentified. And that was just something that's been on my mind, is how do we get, and I know it's up to the individual to report that, but what is there anything that we can do moving forward, how to, you know, probably on Ashley on this, is how to get that where the ladies will start reporting that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so the cancer reporting is tricky. One argument that's been here for years, that some will tell you they feel like it's outside the scope of our authority. The bigger reality is that it's up to the individual to report it.
Exactly.
And 90% of the time, what we find is that it's somebody who retired, then gets diagnosed with cancer. They're not going to go back to the department and tell them. Even if they did, the department in their city is not going to do a first report of injury because they don't want anything to do with it. So it's really difficult to get that information. And we've seen an uptick. We saw more numbers this year than we've ever seen, which we're happy with. But I think it comes from just, we're spreading the word. Please report it. If you know about one, report it. I mean, we're delivering that in our regional meetings and everywhere we go. When I talk to the Texas Fire Chiefs Academy, or when we go to a conference somewhere and we get 15 minutes to boggle them with a bunch of information, that's one of the points we always drive home. We want you to report it if you have it. We really want to know that. And there's no way to make somebody do it. And that whole argument of it's outside of our scope, nobody's ever really answered that. But in the name of trying to prevent injuries, we'd like to have the data if we could.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. How do we get people wanting to do that?
Yeah.
And this is inclusive of all cancer types, not just the presumptive, correct?
For reporting? We encourage them to report any cancer, period. Okay. But there's nothing requiring them to do that.
Does the TCFP public-facing website have a place where a retiree can go online and report themselves?
No. Okay. The only thing that we know about there is the cancer registry. Yeah. Firefighter Cancer Support Network works with the Firefighter Cancer Registry a little bit, but there's really no, there's nowhere for that at this time on our website.
Okay.
I wanted to go back to something Adam said. He talked about the number of people reporting. If you read this report, it'll tell you that roughly 74% of the regulated entities reported injuries last year. We started taking a serious look at that about 4 years ago. Why is that number not 100% every time? What we've identified is two things, and you brought it up. In the commission in 2017 started requiring you to go in and report a zero. If you had no injuries for the month, you go in and tell us that. That's probably not happening across the board. And our compliance folks, when they go in and do an inspection, they remind them of that. They try to encourage them of that. But we're not going to find somebody over not reporting no injuries. I mean, it's just a habit we need to get everybody in. The second part of it, when we took a deeper dive, we've got about 250 entities that we regulate that have anywhere from 1 to 3 employees. So when you think about a standalone fire marshal's office or a law enforcement agency that does arson investigation, so they have to be regulated by us. They have to be certified by us, so we regulate them. But they may only have one investigator, or they might only have 3 employees as a whole. So you look at an organization with 3 employees that's doing fire prevention and fire investigations, they probably won't have an injury in a year. And so when we started putting numbers to that, to the percentages, we came up with about 25% of the people we regulate are 3 people or less. So the reality of them having an injury every year is probably really close to not happening. So based on that, and you know the old saying, statistics don't lie, but statisticians do. So I'm going to be a statistician for a minute and tell you, I think we're doing pretty good. I think we're getting some pretty accurate data out there. What we're not getting is the zero every month, or the agency that doesn't have anything for a year. And we're trying to do better on that. But when you see that 74%, I think it's like 74 point something, I think that's pretty close to 100% of the fire departments and the training facilities that are probably the ones experiencing the injuries. And so I wanted to clear that up as y'all are reading through this report, because that question always comes up, and that's my best theory on that. And we spent a lot of time researching that and trying to figure that out.
So quick question. For clarity, in the past, the Firefighter Advisory Committee has always reviewed the current injury report and then submitted recommendations to the commissioners. Will this committee be doing the same thing as well?
That's a great question for the commissioners.
Okay. So we need clarity on this committee from the commissioners. At the same time, is there a mission statement yet for this specific committee? Is that another good question to ask the commissioners?
There's a broad outline of objectives for this committee that was part of the application process. We could probably pull that and have that here for you guys at your next meeting. But as far as a mission other than what the commissioners wanted you to do, I don't know that there is one. It'd probably be a question for them. And,
okay. Could we possibly send that request to them for their next meeting to get on the agenda?
You guys have an opportunity to give them a report. So
Does that need to be in the form of a motion?
You really can't make a motion because this was just a discussion item, but okay. I think it can be part of the report. The chairman's going to deliver a report.
I'd be comfortable making it part of the report, just saying we're asking for some clarity on it.
You see a problem with that?
Make it part of your report.
A question for clarity.
So, yep. Yeah. For the sake of discussion here, though, what if that's just my idea and nobody agrees with it?
Then you don't have to say anything.
Right. So I don't know.
Make sure you don't let him give you a report for you, Doug.
It does need to be there on their agenda for them to discuss it, doesn't it?
On every commission agenda is a report from the Health and Wellness Committee.
Okay.
It will be on their agenda.
Okay.
Yeah.
And just like there's always a report from your committee.
The first thing you brought up was like the recommendations on the injury report. What was the second thing you said?
Mission statement. For clarification for us as a committee, especially as we move forward.
Yeah.
And then the other thing to ask, because this was discussed at the Firefighter Advisory Committee meeting. So on the injury report on page 3 is the mission statement, but even in the title on the first page, there were questions in the past about the fact, is this part of 419 law wording? Where, let's use the mission statement, because this was the concern the advisory committee had. Under the mission statement, it says the commission shall gather and evaluate data on fire protection personnel injuries and develop recommendations for reducing injuries. So the question is, where does cancer and then now where does mental health fall into that? Is that possibly excluded, or is the assumption or presumption that those are injuries?
And the legal opinion for years, as I referenced earlier, has been that cancer and suicides are not included. They're specifically asking about injuries. We're still encouraging folks. There's nothing wrong with encouraging people to report the data, but it is not outlined in the law.
So if that were to ever be changed, just for the clarification of this committee, mm-hmm. that would entail going through legislature to get this wording changed.
Someone would have to go to the legislature and get 419 opened up, and that subjects it to
everything
any
else.
Kind of change.
Right.
They can open 419 to make any kind of change.
They can do away with it.
Right? And in historical practice, you'll see all kinds of things attached to that. I mean, there'll be things that don't even apply to the fire service. It doesn't mean it can't be done. We have successfully done some things recently in 419 without all that, but it's a risk you take. Somebody has to approach the legislature with some legislation requesting a change.
Well, that's why I'm bringing it up to share with y'all, as passionate as we all probably are in the mental health and definitely the cancers, we're somewhat handcuffed on this as far as the reporting is concerned. Just so we're aware of that, that's really why I wanted to bring that up, because I think those are two of the biggest subjects that every one of us walked into this room with in our own organizations, is the mental health challenges and clearly the cancer concerns.
I think in regards to the injury report, yes.
Yeah.
In regards to the work of this committee, no, absolutely not.
Right, yeah. Right.
But I think that lends to your question.
But we're talking right now about the injury report.
Yeah, so.
So health and wellness, this is the same conversation. It's funny how much overlap there is between different committees and volunteer work that you do for free. How it all kind of comes together, but like defining like what wellness is, and so like we can certainly broaden the mission of this committee to include what we want it to. To Chief Deere's point, yeah, we are a bit strapped when it comes to getting certain things reported. But the beauty is, we also don't have to only act on this injury report.
Right.
The world's our oyster. We can find resource material wherever it resides, as long as we as a committee feel it's credible and worthy of, has the academic rigor that we want to endorse it or share it. So that might be a good eventual thing to try and broaden. Use the influence of the committee to broaden the injury report, but it shouldn't keep us from doing valuable work in the meantime.
Chief Deere, how are you on the Firefighter Advisory Committee? How are y'all making your recommendations? Is it based off of just the data that's presented in the injury report currently?
I don't know if that's entirely true. For the most part, yes. We take the data that's here. If you look over the last number of years, we kind of have the same recommendations year after year, and it's just to vocalize and get the word cancer in there so people are at least aware of it and concerned about how we move forward. Also now, more recently, the mental health aspect was thrown in, I believe, in this year's report. But it's really just wordsmithing the document. It's not doing anything, and that's one of the concerns. I think that's kind of the genesis of this committee. It's a lot of us in the advisory committee years ago, and even the commissioners, were frustrated by all the work that was put into the injury report every year. And the question was, so what do we do with that?
Right.
and nothing was being done with it. Now we are. So there is something that's moving forward. And even the injury report now is even more definitive and explanatory as well. So I think we're all moving in the right direction. I think we're just going through the growing pains of how to get there, especially with the fracture or silo effect sometimes of just different committees all kind of caring about the same issue, but who's fixing it or who's making the recommendations. And we've changed the path. You know, in the past, you know, things went to the curriculum and testing and then went to advisory, then went to the commissioners. It doesn't work that way now. So I think everybody's still trying to learn how the process works, but the need is still there for all that material to be ultimately decided on by the commissioners. I mean, that we all understand that's who's running all of this, but they can't. That's why they designate it and delegate it to us, that we're empowered to make those decisions. And ultimately, it comes back in the form of a recommendation to the commissioners.
Thank you.
I don't know if I worded that.
No, I think you're right. And if you don't mind, I think this committee, just by its existence, is empowered to influence the education of the fire service on health and wellness. I mean, it's a broad topic, but I mean, I think we can get in the weeds here and outside of the injury report. I think the injury report was always the tool to cause the conversations. I think this committee right here could really cause the conversations and have a huge influence.
I think the growing pains that you're talking about is like the key word was recommendations, and it used to be exclusively recommendations come from the Firefighter Advisory Board. And so when this committee, I at least I'll speak for myself, I always felt like I was kind of on pins and needles, like, you know, like knowing the lane, stay in your lane of what this committee can do versus what other committees. And the last few years, this year, the commission handled the injury report. But the last few years that this committee was still relatively active, it seemed like it was Daniel and I would meet, but it was truly the two committees would meet and we would concur. And the report was given by the Firefighters Advisory Committee because we tended to concur on the results. I think this new, my gut feeling is it's most appropriate to come from the Health and Wellness Committee, or at least a freestanding report in addition to something that the Firefighter Advisory Committee might want to do. That it would be kind of a shame to have a Health and Wellness Committee that didn't opine on health and wellness issues. So,
sure.
All right. Any other questions on the injury report? Okay. And then moving on to what I believe might be the most complex issue is the subjects for future meeting agendas, number 6. Oh, you need 5?
No.
No? Okay.
Just making sure nobody else.
Does anybody need 5 real quick? We're at the 1 hour mark.
Okay.
I think we struggle through this and we're done in another 5 or 10. All right, so the subjects for future meeting agendas. My gut feeling is that this is worth pondering and that we should question maybe for your legal counsel. Are we bound by open records when it comes to email chains? And like, can this committee have an all committee member email reply all? And does that break any rules or laws?
If you're talking about informational or just regular email between members, that's fine. It's just you can't come to a decision or have a vote or something on email without going through the process, you know, having a in other words, you can't have like a pre-vote by email.
Yeah.
But as far as information,
but we're not worried about like topics. A walking meeting.
Yeah.
So we could share topics of like, hey, absolutely, I think we need to talk about this or that, and just to get ideas around.
Yeah, you could say possibilities for future agenda items, for instance.
Yeah.
That's perfectly legit. As long as there's not any decision made, there's not, you know, how many of y'all are going to vote for this, that sort of thing. But information, perfectly fine. Just understand, they're not subject to the Open Records Act as fire departments.
But there are
fire departments they are, but as a committee they probably are as well.
Everything I do on this computer is open.
Just understand that anybody can ask for your emails.
I am the old boring saving plan. They will be terribly Incredibly sorry they put that open record request in. All right. So unless somebody has something pressing, I would suggest that maybe we contemplate this, and you know, I'll set up an email this evening. I think it already exists, as a matter of fact, and we can throw some topics in there, and then we can, as we create the agenda, is that a decision?
I think, go ahead. We just need to know, once you guys set a meeting date, we'll tell you when we need your recommended agenda items so that we can build the agenda and get it to the registrar.
And that's not a vote. I set the agenda.
Or we do. If I receive an email, or if a commissioner has a topic and they tell us this needs to be on their agenda, we kind of keep a running list for all the committees, and then I think it's safe to say about 5 weeks out from the meeting, we build an agenda and we start getting it ready, because we've got a timeline to submit it to the Texas Register and all that. And you'll see it as the chair. We'll send it to you. I look this over. Is it everything you wanted? Do we need to tweak anything before we send it to the Register? But there's certainly a timeline there, and we try not to push it right up to the edge. I think some people would. I'm not a fan of that. I want to get it done and know that it's done. And I think with 7 days, we got to have an agenda posted, 2 weeks. And I'm a 3 or 4 week guy, because I always want to have some room in case something gets missed or screwed up somewhere. And I just get nervous. It's on my calendar. I start looking at it. I drive them crazy with, hey, we need to get this done. You know, where are we at? So I think you've got some time. And once you guys, we'll have a discussion with them about your next meeting, and then I think we'll kind of say, all right, based on that date, by this day, we need to have what you want on the agenda so we can build it.
And consistent how you guys are.
Yeah, and to weigh in, any one of us can bring an agenda item through the chair to get it on the agenda. Right. Whether we discuss it or not is a different issue. I mean, we can choose or vote to not address it and just move on. But we can't have an action on it if it wasn't posted on the agenda, according to the law. Yeah. And Amanda will be on top of you to make sure it's right and done at the right time.
Amanda or whoever's doing it. We're right. In a little transition.
But, yeah. They'll hand walk you through that. Yeah. But they will let you know that the deadline's coming. They need that agenda approved. So any one of us. And I think that's the beauty of the diversity of this committee is, if you hear something in your organization or anywhere else in the state fire service that's relevant that this committee should be discussing, it needs to be, but the venue to do that is to get it on the agenda, and then we can open it up and discuss it at the next meeting.
Yeah, and so I guess in my head, I'll probably foresee like a call for agenda items, email going out, and like if you put it on the email, it's going on. Like when I say I said it, like that's the email to them, but like I won't be calling your things. If you have something you want to talk about, we're going to talk about it.
Well, and I don't want to step out of bounds, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but the other beauty of that is you could have somebody else come to you saying, why is the Health and Wellness Committee not addressing this? Yeah. And at your next meeting, I'd like to come and present. Mm-hmm. And so they can come. We can have a line full of people. This could be an all-day meeting at some point. Hopefully not, but it could. And anybody else from the public, then, once we've opened it up for discussion, they can come and share their information or their knowledge or their opinion or whatever their request is, and then we act upon that appropriately. But that's the way. It's not just this committee. It's the whole state of Texas Fire Service that we're just the venue that they go to get the information to where it needs to be.
And so, just be careful. We're not all retired yet.
Yeah.
I think he's probably busier than I am as a retiree.
I do have a question about future agenda, real quick. Can we request a report from the commit from you? On
you can get it whether you ask for it or not. But sure, you can.
Well, I'm just in mind is going back to the suicide and the reporting and all that. I know the law enforcement side. They have mental health by law, mm-hmm. and that's we actually stole some of the verbiage in our personnel manual. It was already in there for them by law about the some sort of, I can't remember exact words, or they get some sort of difficult call. They are authorized so much time off after a difficult call. That does not exist with the fire service. So I stole their verbiage for a personnel manual for that. So it's in law. It's all known in your meetings, with them, if we can get a report from, you know, kind of like what you're finding out, how they're getting that stuff without opening 419, I guess, is what your concern is, how we can get...
You can ask us for anything. I'll give you something, even if I make it up.
Yeah. We'll just... I mean, with your meetings going on, I didn't know if, what kind of meeting, what kind of head we might be getting.
No, and as Daniel pointed out, I mean, we could get an email from anybody in the fire service. Hey, we'd like to talk to your health and wellness committee about this. We'll put it on the agenda. You'll get to see it because we'll have it outlined on there. But then, you know, today's agenda was kind of dull, honestly. I mean, there wasn't a lot. There was no action items on there other than the election. So nobody's here. But I think we can expect to see this room have some spectators in it on a regular basis. It's a pretty wide open committee right here. We're covering a big...
Especially if the commission pushes something here.
Yeah.
Or the advisory committee. Then.
And don't count it out. I mean, unfortunately, I've been around here 30 years, and my time on the advisory committee, there were some 2- and 3-day meetings. I mean, the agendas were that big. So don't get used to an hour-and-a-half meeting.
Back of lunch is what I'm here.
I can just break for lunch, but yeah, get a room for a couple of nights. I mean, we'll know when those are coming. I mean, you'll get better reading that agenda and understand what's going on. And there'll be lots of conversation between you and I and Frank and you and I. And I mean, we'll stay on top of it.
Very good.
Is there any thought on another platform that maybe is a little less messy than group email?
Yeah, I mean, you name a software and my city's using it. And I probably don't remember my password to it. Yeah, we can use anything. Teams, SharePoint.
Yeah, anything that would be inclusive that, you know, if he sends an idea but it's 6 emails back and I reiterate the same idea, maybe just to cut down on some of that. I don't know if that looks like a Google Doc or something shared or...
Anybody know, can you set up a Teams channel outside of your organization?
Yes.
So Teams, it would really lean to it. Yep. Lean to it then. With Teams, because you can have a chat function, you can have a file function, you can have projects. It could really lay out nicely.
Just don't hold a Teams meeting as a committee.
Right. Yeah, you can't do that.
Don't do that. Don't call it that. But the other thing I'll recommend, you guys can email one another all day long. Leave us out of it until you're ready for us to have something as an agenda item or you have a question for it. That frees up some of the messiness you were referring to.
I think after this first next meeting, I don't think that y'all are going to have much of a need because y'all are going to probably be working on something and you'll have something to put on the agenda for future agenda items at the next meeting. I think this first agenda is probably going to be the one that y'all are going to need something for. After that, it probably shouldn't be an issue.
It's going to flow pretty easy after this. Especially in November when you give a report that this committee's up and running and you're looking for things to do, bang on. You'll be opening the door right there.
Very good.
There's a lot of special interest groups that you'll be hearing from.
Yeah.
Firefighter Advisory is going to love you guys because this is going to take some stuff off their plate.
Mm-hmm. No, we the finger goes both ways. All right. Any on the subject for future agenda meetings, anything absolute at this point somebody wants to put out there? Is everybody comfortable waiting on a communications instrument? Okay. And so then number 7, discussion regarding future meeting dates. And I'm always a fan of attending the commission meetings and giving a meaningful report that's timely. And the next commission meeting is November 21st. I wonder, like, how long the next meeting will be and how productive. I think it's going to be a lot of work that's done in kind of setting direction. And so I would, my preference, my suggestion would be that we try and meet before November 21st so that we have a meaningful report to them. I don't know that there's solutions. It's just kind of like a meaningful update to them. But I don't know that Firefighter Advisory Committee meets twice a year.
No, four.
All year, four, and is it always the day before the commission meeting?
No, never.
Never. We need a workshop.
From the staff, we need at least a month between the meetings, because it takes time for us to take whatever action items you had that are going to the commission and get all that put in the agenda and the paperwork for the notebook and things like that. So the commission meets February, May, August, and November now. So we try to get the committees to stay a month either side of each of those meetings so that there's time to operate in there.
For what it's worth, I would suggest that we not meet before then, because I think there's going to need to be time for us to digest, to at least know where we're going, and to give that next report to the commissioners to let them know, hey, we're up and running, we're here, we've got some future actionable items that we need, but we also need some direction from them. And I know they're right now in the middle of trying to get the advisory committee fully staffed, because they're down to 5 members right now, and the same with the curriculum and testing committee. So I know they've got their plate full, but I can't imagine, based on this meeting and the advisory meeting that we had last week, that the commissioners won't, after their November 21st meeting, be throwing things or asking questions of this committee. Does that sound accurate to you?
Yeah. I looked at it a little bit. I've actually got some dates in January for you, and the reason I picked January, December is always tough for everybody to meet, and by January, I think it would be safe to say that if you guys made it known in your report your next meeting was January and brought up about the 11th seat being vacant still and needing somebody starting at 25, I bet they could address that there, and we could probably help make sure there's an agenda item for them to be able to address that, but that would probably give you a full committee for your first meeting of the new year.
Will they be, in their November meeting, will they be officially making that 11th position ratified so that come January we have that 11th member on this committee?
I can't say that. We can encourage that, and we can have conversations with the chairman and try to put something on their agenda.
Right.
But right now, I can't say what they're going to do. The only way I know the subcommittee's working on is bringing them names for the other two committees.
Right. I know they got a plate full right now. But
I can't sit here and tell you what they're going to do. Right. Maybe.
So how
there's 13 of them that can tell you what they're going to do. But.
So how do we help facilitate that or encourage that?
If you all would like that, I could talk to the chairman and Frank and see how we could word something to make that possible. If at that meeting they wanted to go ahead and appoint somebody starting in 25. I think it's pretty easy to do. It's all in the wording of the agenda item about committees, but I think that would be easy. But I think it would need to be addressed in your report as well, that your next meeting is whenever and you're hoping to have that 11th seat filled, and that kind of drives that point home. But
yeah.
And if we're considering January, there's a couple of conferences I wanted to make sure everybody was aware of, so we try not to conflict with that. There's the Second in Command Conference for Texas Fire Chiefs Association. That is the 20th through the 22nd of January. And then there is a newly formed conference called the Behavioral Threat Assessment Management Conference that's being led by DPS in the state of Texas. I serve on that board for our local area here, and I'll be at that conference speaking also. I don't know if any of y'all will be at that conference as well, but that's the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before. It is the 13th, 14th, and 15th. And those are the only two that I'm aware of off the top of my head in January.
But the TEKS Leadership Symposium is in Frisco the week of the 20th and 20th through the 22nd.
Okay, so those both are in the same week then?
Same week.
Okay.
Late this year.
I did a little research for you with conferences in mind and came up with 4 possible dates, and you guys can pick any of them or not. January the 8th or 9th, or the 15th or 16th. Those 2 weeks seem to be free and clear of most organized fire service events in the state.
So the 8th is a Wednesday?
Yep.
9th Thursday, and same the following 15, week, Wednesday, 16th. Thursday.
Yep. The 15th, 16th is a better week for me, but what about y'all?
Yeah,
I'm
15,
having 16. Surgery on the 7th of January.
Well, you'll be fine by the 8th.
It's in Austin, so... Well, I was just going to say that was better.
We made a requirement.
You just may not want her voting on anything.
Yeah, the 8th and 9th would not conflict with any conferences.
I'll entertain. It sounds like the 8th and 9th are less desirable for a few people. The 15th and 16th, I haven't heard any concerns with.
I would not be available on the 15th. That would be the only day I would not be available.
How about the 16th?
16th, I am available, yes. I would be back for that.
So does the 16th seem good? Looky there, our first real decision, January 16th, back in this room.
10 a.m. or 9 or?
10 a.m. works good for me. I like to sleep in my own bed, so I drive up that morning and I drive home that afternoon.
Yeah, I'm in.
Okay.
Just make sure there's not more than six of y'all riding together in one car, because if you start talking about agenda items, just a point of clarification. Same thing at lunch.
You're talking legal. I'm talking like an R&D to reset the board if something catastrophic happened. All right, so January 16th at 10 a.m., the next time we'll get together. And so that brings us to agenda number.
Hold on. I was going to say, for agenda items, suggestions, if the meeting is January the 16th, I'm going to ask that you have any agenda items to us by the 23rd, I guess, of December. That gives us time with the holidays and all to work through that and get that submitted. So,
perfect.
Could I ask that we tentatively look at which months we would be meeting in for the rest of 2025? Maybe not solidify specific dates, but in other words, I don't want to chug January and then we set our next meeting. It'd be great if we already knew when that might be about.
Because we just have to have the two throughout, right?
So are we going to meet quarterly or are we going to meet? We're required to meet twice, but
I would suggest quarterly.
I would right now because we don't know how this is going to play out with the advisory and certainly the commissioners.
Yeah, I think we need to set four, and I wouldn't be surprised if mid-year as we get moving, maybe we even pull another one. But twice a year at the infancy, I don't think it's going to be enough.
No. Especially as dormant as this committee's been for a while, so.
I would say a minimum of quarterly, and then we could add meetings as needed.
Okay.
So, Chief Wisco, when are the commissioners typically, what months are the commissioners meeting?
February, May, August, and November.
And then the advisory, we're meeting, I know, September, December.
I'll typically meet March, June,
September, and December.
So theoretically, if you're having a first meeting in January, you would probably look at coming back, say, in April if you want to do quarterly. So January, April. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And because the commission meeting would be in May, so that would be
that works out pretty
great
ideal
to have something. Yeah. So just somewhere in May, we don't have to pick a date unless y'all were wishing to do that.
April.
I'm sorry, April. Yeah. I'm just making that suggestion so we know.
The January meeting ended up being the third Thursday, and I wonder if that works for people, if we just adopt quarterly third Thursday, and that makes it very predictable. It's kind of on the same cycle that the commission meets.
I'm good with that.
The only challenge I see to that is the third Thursday in April is in the middle of the TFCA annual conference.
Look at that. Yeah, that would be problematic for a number of us.
Those conflicts are always going to exist. I mean, I think as a rule of thumb, you guys can always look at that, but I wouldn't get too far out ahead with picking dates.
Okay. All right, so April's going to be our target, and we'll set a date in January.
So we're looking tentatively the month before the commission meets, January, April, July, and
October.
And that
will also work out. It will typically be the month after the advisory committee meeting as well. So that made it, I know for you, for staff, that kind of lends a little normalcy
sure
to it. So
I like the way y'all are going with it. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt the job.
No, there's a lot of inner workings that we're lucky to have the experience.
And don't worry, tomorrow we're going to change it all, so the next thing is we are the government. We're here to help.
Yeah, I'm okay with change. Okay, then, so directionally, we know January 16th is our day, and directionally, April, July, and October, we're going to shoot for, we'll set those days at the our next meeting. That we'll set the next meeting at our next meeting. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so if we finally, at number 8, adjourn the meeting, then have a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, have a motion and...
Who was our second?
Green and O'Neill, I think, or was it Story?
Story.
Story was the second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? And we are adjourned. Good job, guys.
1 hour and 40 minutes. Struggled. Be sure you turn your microphones off, please.
I didn't know it was on. I would have spoken less freely.
Is it just me, or is every time he mentioned Commissioner Sharma, I thought of Chief Boyker?
I knew.
I advised him not to say it, so I just kept calling him Doug. As you're coming down the stairs, I was like, oh, here comes Chief Boyker. See, I didn't know. Oh, I heard it. I got gambled at. She is a very sweet person. She's enjoying that new baby.
I think it touched her quite a bit before she represented my wife to two actions.
Oh, really?
And I'll tell you, she is very good at what she says. Yes.
She's
highly
recommended. She is.
As a
matter of fact, when she was open house, she showed up. She brought her old sister.
You were driving.